6th episode, Why Love People? On the vast expanse stretching to the horizon, an elevated spot was chosen. It glowed brightly in the sunlight during the day and shimmered with silvery reflections of moonlight at night. Dozens of people in bright orange attire formed a circle, with the sage seated in the center. He spoke not loudly, yet among the listeners, such silence prevailed that, when the master fell silent, the air seemed to ring, and the first droplets of mist hovered over the ground. The last sun rays had long gone when the people gathered around the Keeper of Knowledge began to disperse. On the flat meadow covered with young green grass they had sat since noon, attentively listening to the teachings of the Great Master, step by step, unraveling the Great Wisdom. In the air, one could sense the power emanating from these people, as they were all absorbed in the pursuit of truth. Here sat the closest disciples and followers of the Great Master, turned towards spiritual development and understanding. Tranquility and serenity were written on their enlightened faces. Only one woman of short stature, with dark chestnut hair, tied in a simple ponytail, seemed restless. It appeared as though doubt tormented her, and she desperately wanted to ask the Great Master about something, but she couldn't bring herself to it. Only when the last of the disciples bid the sage good night and went to rest did she finally make up her mind. Sitting closer, she looked at the sage. With his penetrating gaze, he noticed the anxiety and indecision on the disciple's face, looked at her straight in the eyes, and began the conversation.
Liza, I see that you want to ask me about something personal that has been troubling you all evening. Share your concerns with me.
Overcoming her hesitation, the woman spoke very quietly, hesitating and carefully choosing her words.
Dear Master, in one of your trances, you urge us to strive for elevated desires, attain the divine, and love all people. Thinking about it, I begin to realize that for me, these are just beautiful words that I repeat after you, but I can understand them only at the level of knowledge, no more. But on the path to the realization of truth, I have clearly understood that intellectual understanding gives nothing, as only the heart can love. And in the book Wisdom, you say that the mind can come close to understanding, but only the heart can experience the state of love for God.
Here, Lisa fell silent, unsure of how to ask about her most intimate concerns. The sage attentively gazed at her with love and patience. Seeing support in his eyes, the disciple continued,
I don't feel that my heart is capable of such a noble act. I have never experienced genuine love for people. My flashes of irritation towards their actions and personal qualities stem from the fact that I can tolerate people only until they do what I consider right, what I like, or what is beneficial to me. In all other cases, people hinder me, annoy me, evoke fear, envy, and other base emotions of an animal level.
Do absolutely all people around you cause irritation and disapproval when they don't meet your expectations?
The sage interrupted. The woman pondered for a moment, lowering her gaze and playing with the belt of her dress between her fingers. Then she replied,
Spiritual tutors, of course, inspire respect because they are undoubtedly better than me. But again, these are mathematical calculations of the mind. The heart remains silent. There is no acceptance and love in it. There is no feeling at all.
With each uttered word, Lisa felt more courageous, sensing the master's support and interest.
If there is no sincere interest in people within you, on what then is based your declared goal and the meaning of life? On personal assistance to people?
The sage asked.
Sometimes it seems to me that I don't care about them at all. The only thing that truly bothers me is the question about myself,
Lisa said quietly and slowly, as if deeply hiding these words even from herself, reluctant to acknowledge them. But with the Master, she could be open. Internally acknowledging her spiritual poverty, she continued.
It's frightening. It turns out that my true motives of service are to be good, to flatter my vanity, to receive praise, condescendingly assert myself over the weak. The purpose of my actions is merely to amuse my mind with something interesting, nothing more. And yet, I don't even strive for any lofty goals or results. You know, it seems to me it's deformity and complete underdevelopment of the heart. Master, tell me, what do I need to do to open my heart and feel love for the people around me?
Having said this, Lisa waited for the Master's condemnation or reprimand. However, the sage's face expressed understanding and approval. It was evident that he perceived the woman's confusion, not as a flaw, but as her transition to a new stage of development on the path to the realization of truth. Looking into her eyes, the sage spoke with a smile.
And this is already a very good beginning. You have managed to recognize the reasons that prevent you from feeling love for people. Continue your reflections, and you will understand that without love for people, it is impossible to become happy yourself. After all, if others cause irritation in you, and you constantly notice their flaws, it hurts you, first and foremost. How can you feel happy in such a state?
Does it mean that I need to love people for my own sake, to achieve happiness?
Lisa asked, seeking to comprehend the words spoken by the sage.
Exactly,
affirmed the master.
And then each encounter with every person will bring you joy and interest. You will be able to derive positive emotions from simple communication, and that means that every day of yours will be filled with positivity.
But how can I force myself to overcome irritation and be filled with love for people?
Lisa impatiently asked, as this question had been tormenting her the most lately.
Of course, it's not simple. To love people, you need to tune yourself, strive for it.
These words puzzled Lisa, and the sage patiently explained their meaning.
To tune in means gradually changing your own attitude toward people. Start with those people who are sympathetic to you, who already evoke pleasant feelings. Therefore, it will be easy for you to be predisposed towards them. Try to love them with all your heart, and you will see how much brighter and more positive your life will become. Feeling love in your heart, redirect your attention to people you feel neutral about. Highlight in them what triggers positive emotions in you. Inquire about their lives and spiritual world.
But what about those I dislike? How can I make myself feel joy towards those who irritate me and evoke negative emotions?
Asked Lisa. Her face expressed bewilderment at that moment.
With time, having learned to enjoy communication and experiencing genuine love for people, you'll be able to approach with more calmness the traits of people that currently provoke your aversion and anger,
said the sage, smiling.
Just understand that hatred towards others will always be a cause for distress. Why do you need these experiences and negative emotions? Wouldn't it be better to get rid of them?
As he spoke, the master watched the woman attentively as her facial expression changed, the wrinkles of tension on her forehead smoothed, and the confusion went away. It seemed that at that moment, she could understand the true reasons for loving people. A spark lit up in her eyes, and the woman spoke with impatience.
So, If I just tune in, start thinking that love for people will bring me positive thoughts and emotions, I will feel much better. And when I truly feel this love in my heart, will I become happy? And I need this feeling myself. By experiencing the joy of communication, enjoying the company of people, I can get closer to God, see Him with my heart. Because God is love, right?
The sage was pleasantly surprised by how quickly Lisa transitioned to a new stage of understanding the truth, as this realization inspired her. Continuing her thoughts, the master briefly spoke, not to interrupt the flow of the girl's thoughts.
Absolutely. One who dwells in love dwells in God.
Receiving support, Lisa continued.
When a person tunes into love, they begin to think about the reasons that prevent them from loving people. Probably these reasons were most often laid down in childhood. That's how my parents raised me, and that's how other people around me behaved.
Lisa paused for a moment, straightened her back, and said confidently,
"But now everything will be different. I will be able to tune in to be predisposed towards people, strive to love them, feel joy from each meeting. And with each day, I will feel better. Life will become more joyful and interesting. There will be no separation. On the contrary, there will be merging with people, with the world, with everything around. And over time, this will allow me to know God."
It was already dark, and only the smoldering campfire cast reflections on the clear and pure faces of people sitting on the soft grass. For a moment, they fell silent. Summing up, the Keeper of Knowledge said,
"Now you understand that your confusion was related to incorrect thinking, rejection of others' opinions. Being aloof from others evokes corresponding emotions. But it's enough to change your own attitude, and then your approach to life will change radically. Ponder more often. After all, every person is a part of God, and God is in everything. So I am also a part of God, and I am one with all these people. I am inseparable from others, which means God is in me and in each one of us. Tune yourself precisely like this, and it will be much easier for you to feel love for people."
The sage understood that the woman needed time to fully comprehend his words. Moreover, the sky was already illuminated by millions of bright stars, and each of them needed rest. Therefore, they bid farewell and dispersed. A week later, in the secluded temple hidden from prying eyes, several hundred people gathered, drawn by the thirst for knowledge of truth. The spacious room was bright and slightly cool. Through wide-open windows, the rays of warm spring sun penetrated, and the wind gently moved the light curtains, bringing in the sweet scents of blooming lilacs from outside. Around the Keeper of Knowledge, people of various ages and social statuses gathered. They came here for prayer and to receive answers on the path to understanding the world. Among them sat Lisa. During this time, she had changed significantly. There was no longer any anxiety and indecision on her face. The small wrinkles on her forehead had smoothed out, and she confidently looked into the eyes of other disciples. She sat up straight, and all her movements were filled with an amazing lightness and grace. Settled near an open window, Lisa crossed her legs, and the wind gently played with her loose hair. It was evident that she had now realized much, but her eyes were even more aflame with the thirst for knowledge, and she eagerly awaited the moment when she could ask her questions to the great master. Now, she no longer sought solitude and could discuss even the most intimate topics among other disciples. After all, she had embraced the people in her heart and felt her unity with them, the Master, God, and the entire world. As tradition dictated, the spiritual discourse began with the reading of prayers. The master sat on a small elevation resembling a stage, allowing everyone present to see him. His words sounded loud and expressive, and each of the attendees repeated the familiar lines in a whisper. Their voices merged into a single murmur, reminiscent of an echo in caves or at the foot of a mountain. When the sage finished reading the prayer, silence reigned in the temple. All disciples turned their attention outward. All of them wished to receive answers to their questions, constantly evolving on the path to understanding truth. And when it was time to ask questions, Lisa immediately raised her hand high. The keeper of knowledge quickly noticed the changes in the demeanor of this woman. He nodded to her, endowing her with a warm gaze that radiated wisdom and kindness.
Just recently, I absolutely couldn't understand how one could embrace all people in their heart, sincerely love everyone who crossed their life's path.
Lisa began from a distance to explain to the others present.
People, for the most part, evoked irritation and other negative emotions in me. Thanks to your advice, I was finally able to realize why I need to love people. Initially, I couldn't accept everyone. To tune into accepting other people before the mind gives its assessment, I started trying to feel gratitude towards them. Master, tell me, will the ability to love develop through this?
Hearing these words, the sage smiled paternally and responded with a calm, paced voice.
Certainly, everything can start with gratitude. After all, it's also a positive thought. Like everything good we see in people, it brings us closer to love in our hearts. Try to look at those around you like this. We all gathered, walking the spiritual path together. Each person in their way helps me. Even if I ask and they refuse, it's still helpful. It means there's something to work on, something to practice. That's good, too. If you constantly set yourself up positively, like this, loving people will become much easier.
So, to feel love for people in your heart, you need to tune in mentally, right?
A young, tall guy with very expressive eyes picked up the conversation.
Of course,
confirmed the master.
The main thing is the right mental attitude. Everything starts from there. Then it helps to adjust emotions and even the body. Then we develop a different attitude towards the people around us and the world in general.
But how can you love people and stay connected to the Master God? I've always valued being connected to something. How do you stay connected and love other people?
Quietly asked a petite, plump woman in a simple fitted dress. As she spoke these words, she looked at the floor, trying to articulate her thoughts clearly. Only after asking the question did she dare to look at the Master. A certain seriousness appeared on the sage's face. He answered immediately, speaking each word clearly.
When we say the word love, we do not mean swadhisthana. After all, to love a person, it is not necessary to engage in sex with them.
On these words, a spark of slyness gleamed in the master's eyes, and everyone present also smiled. But he continued his explanation with calm seriousness.
When we say love, we are talking about anahata. It is on anahata that we should love all people.
How do you distinguish between these two concepts?
The woman didn't quite understand the words of the sage and asked him for clarification. The master began to speak calmly with no rush.
To start loving the people around you, just look around. Here are people, and they are all together with the Master. We are all growing together, all evolving. Together we form a community that helps each other awaken. Therefore, we are all together as a whole. And we need to love all people just like that. Never single out anyone. Do not think that if you love the Master, you don't have to love all the other people around you. On the contrary, if I love the Master, then I also need to love the Master's disciples, and even those who may potentially become disciples. They too are developing, striving for the knowledge of truth, which means we are all one, and we must love them. This is anahata. Whereas in Swadhisthana, selectivity governs us, and we only love those we consider better, while towards other people, we can feel indifference or even disdain. In anahata, we love all people. We unite people into some greater community and love this entire community.
The Master's words had a profound effect on the woman. She pondered over them, but couldn't find a response so far. Meanwhile, taking advantage of the opportune moment, Lisa decided to ask again for answers to her intimate questions. She raised her hand, and the sage nodded in response, giving her the floor.
"I experience a very complex feeling,"
she began, trying to verbally express her emotions.
"How can one understand if they have come to love people more, and at the same time, not fall into extremes?"
Here the woman paused for a moment, formulating her thought.
"There is a friendly attitude towards a person when you close your eyes to some of their flaws and only see the good sides. Or, on the contrary, because I love people, now I'll help everyone. And you interfere with everyone with your advice and help that turns out to be unnecessary."
All the disciples smiled at Lisa's words, and the Master decided to support the direction of her thought, answering,
"Certainly. Loving doesn't mean giving a bottle of vodka to an alcoholic so that he drinks himself to death. Giving a syringe with drugs to an addict. Helping a thief steal."
The Master paused for a moment, allowing the disciples to understand the irony in his words. While the Master spoke these words, Lisa managed to find the exact wording for the feelings that had accumulated in her soul. With confidence, she continued,
"Now, finally, a situation has arisen for me where I feel the ability to love all people. Am I correct in understanding you, Master, that to love means to help others spiritually grow? If we base our understanding of love on this, then we can be aware of our own development in this direction by understanding whom I help today to grow, to become better, right?"
"You reason correctly, Lisa,"
affirmed the keeper.
"To love means to strive to make a person better. If we love a person, we want to make them more perfect, meaning we help them to overcome their shortcomings, weaknesses, and certain misconceptions. By loving them, we make them better."
"What if a child grows up and nothing interests him?"
joined the conversation a stout 45-year-old woman with a voluminous hairstyle and a tired look.
"He doesn't want anything. He just stares at the computer,"
she sighed.
"He doesn't want to work, isn't interested in anything. Why does this happen when I've tried to give him the very best all my life?"
The sage responded immediately because the woman's question only echoed what he had said earlier.
"That's precisely because you indulged his weaknesses, his vices, and did not nurture anything good in him. You didn't try to make him better."
A hint of disapproval echoed in his voice.
"And that's what grew out of this child. And they ask what to do with him now. It turns out that now it's challenging to do anything. But you should have started by asking yourself, can I even train a dog? If not, then why should I undertake the upbringing of a human? How can I give him something? How can I raise a complete person if I don't even know how to handle a dog? I don't know how to make it better, but if I take on a person, I could completely ruin him with my wrong attitude."
"How can we prevent this?"
several people asked immediately, vividly touched by the problem voiced by the keeper of knowledge.
For this, it's essential for parents to spiritually develop themselves, even before the birth of the child.
The master answered,
"Learn to educate a young person, instill in him the right attitude towards life. Only after that should you consider whether you're ready to take on the responsibility and become a parent."
The master looked sternly at the audience, especially noticing the young women, as if entrusting them with the responsibility for the fate of the next generation, and continued,
"Unfortunately, as a rule, in life, it doesn't happen that way. Children are born out of foolishness, and then vices and weaknesses of the child are indulged, supposedly out of love for him. And when a scoundrel grows out of him, they start asking what to do now. But it's too late now. You should have thought about it earlier, even before birth."
Silence descended in the hall. It seemed that every adult in the room felt a certain sense of guilt, both for themselves and for society as a whole. The Keeper of Knowledge scanned the audience with the beam of his attention, satisfied with the manifestation of conscience in their subtle bodies, indicating the awakening of the higher emotional center. Lisa, stealthily wiping tears of remorse from her flushed cheeks, decided to steer the conversation back to the topic that troubled her.
"Master, tell me, in life, there are situations when negative reactions manifest, and they work very quickly, purely mechanically. Only later do I begin to realize them, and worry that I've depleted energy, lost strength, and there's an energy drain. I understand that a negative thought appeared, but I didn't track it as something alien, mistook it for my belief. And this thought gave a push to the emotional center. It released energy, there was an energy outflow. How can one remove this mechanical aspect, learn to control their emotions in order to remain in love, in unity with others?"
Finally, Lisa managed to formulate the main question that had been troubling her. The master listened to her words with great attention, and when she finished, he responded with a calm and confident voice.
"It's important to see it within yourself. You need to notice what triggers the influx of negative emotions in you. What you feel at that moment, what you think. Then constantly remind yourself of this, that there is such a vicious process within me, and try not to let it appear. If we constantly think about when a situation that can provoke a surge of negative emotions in me will occur, we can stop this process in advance. And the main thing is always to think about it, to remind yourself of it. Then, when such a thing arises, we can say to ourselves, 'Ah, here it is,' and rip out the unwanted reactions from its roots. Don't let this process develop. Then you won't lose energy."
Lisa truly absorbed the words of the sage and, wanting to make sure, she asked,
"But what if I do the opposite and try to react differently, so that energy is not lost, but, on the contrary, strengthened?"
"The main thing is to constantly remember this, constantly remind yourself. Hang reminders, sheets with positive affirmation, set an alarm to remind yourself more often,"
the sage affirmed.
"If we remember, we can cope. But if we don't remember anything, then at the right moment, we won't be able to do anything."
From Lisa's expression, it could be understood that she found an answer to her question. The master noticed this and looked again at all those present. The first to raise his hand was a man in the second row, sitting against the wall. He was dressed in jeans and a light t-shirt. His posture and facial expression expressed openness. It felt like he was already close to grasping the essence of love for people and was ready to move on.
"Master, tell me, is it correct that when we communicate, we should rely on the treasures of the soul?"
he began.
After all, to avoid blurring in love, one needs rigor. And to prevent rigor from turning into cruelty, it needs to be balanced with conscience. If we rely on these three components, we can find the right spiritual attitude and a state of love.
The keeper emphasized the disciple's right line of thought with an open gesture and sent him an even subtler energy of clarity and deep unity with all existence.
Of course, love must be with rigor, with conscience, with awareness. A harmonious situation arises precisely when all these treasures act together in unity. At the same time, it's essential to maintain balance. If one of these components outweighs, a disharmonious state arises, and we start thinking and acting incorrectly. That's why it's crucial to rely on all treasures of the soul together each time, using them evenly. Then the right ideal state will reign in our soul.
In the next moment, several hands were raised in the hall. The eyes of the people showed interest and a thirst for knowledge. They eagerly awaited answers to the constantly arising questions. The master noticed a short man, whose hair already glinted with gray, but he had been quietly listening to others, not participating in the conversation. The sage made an inviting gesture towards him, and the man began.
"Great one, at our last meeting, you advised me of a very powerful spiritual practice, saying that through the warm-up of the physical body with emotional settings, I could work on my own vices."
The man spoke slowly and hesitantly. He constantly paused, trying to choose the right words.
"I immediately started doing it. The most ingenious thing about it is that changes occur on all three levels: emotional, motor, and intellectual. However, changing my attention doesn't happen right away. Sometimes, even after experiencing a very strong emotion, I can't achieve full understanding. Or vice versa, I suggest, tell myself something, and hardly feel any emotions. Why can't I get out of being mechanical? And how can I achieve a conscious understanding of the truth?"
The keeper of knowledge particularly liked questions based on practical experience gained by disciples following his recommendations. He sent support to the disciple in his spiritual efforts and immediately found something to answer.
"That's because spiritual practices need to be pursued constantly,"
he began.
"Changing in 5 minutes is impossible. A person must constantly desire, think about overcoming their own vices, remember them more often, experience inner feelings."
"Only after meeting you did I start asking myself what I was like and why I was like that,"
the man said embarrassedly.
"Before, I constantly praised myself, considered myself right in everything. Now, I increasingly realize that I cannot be like that, and that I urgently need to be in a different state."
The keeper of knowledge encouraged the disciple with a broad smile and patiently continued his explanations.
"In the warm-up, you can register in which state you should be. You need to try to be in this state more often. Enter this state regularly. If you show great active state, correct thoughts will repeat more often. This is the state you need to strive for. And if you show passiveness, you'll start to degrade, and opposite thoughts will start appearing in your head. And nobody needs that."
"But how can I make myself constantly show activity?"
the man asked, puzzled.
"During spiritual practice, you need to memorize all the changes that occur in you, and then constantly cultivate this same state. Try to be in it, experience the same emotions, think about it, constantly monitor yourself. And when it becomes evident to you that you're in the wrong state, try to get angry, activate yourself physically."
"So, I need to try as often as possible to enter a strong state and cultivate the right thoughts?"
concluded the gray-haired man.
"Exactly,"
confirmed the keeper of knowledge.
"And then changes will begin inside you.
But it will happen only if a person himself starts to support this state, not when someone tells how it should be. Practical experience is needed.
The next question came from a woman with curly red hair and freckles on her face. The master allowed her to speak, and all the other disciples' eyes instantly turned towards her.
Master, tell me, am I correct in understanding that a person is initially doomed to be forbidden to love, and only then can consciously learn to love? For example, small children. When they love, they run up to a dog, jump on it, actively squeeze it, thus showing their love. But the dog is not ready for such a stormy assault. It doesn't even know that someone loves it. It has its own established safety zone. Or they start squeezing another child, and some children can even get to adults. But such behavior is impermissible. It will cause disapproval in others. The child will undoubtedly be restricted.
Of course, they will try to make him like everyone else, to average him. To the extent they succeed in doing so,
answered the keeper of knowledge.
But if a person is strong, it is difficult to average him. If weak, it is quite easy. And this happens constantly in society. Everyone is being averaged. Everyone is in such a state.
But then why didn't God make this world more perfect?
Asked the red-haired woman, a bit embarrassed by the boldness of her question.
Perhaps the meaning of earthly life lies precisely in this, and that's why spiritual practice is needed,
posed the keeper, asking his disciples to explore the space of truth.
Because if an angel descended to humans immediately, he would feel completely unnecessary. Imperfect society cripples human souls, deforms us. It's not a mistake, but God's plan, for everyone to understand, fully realize how bad it is to be a crippled, a fool, and start rebuilding oneself, fighting against society and the stereotypes embedded in us. All of this gives us necessary experience, the experience of laziness, mistakes, imperfection, and this helps us find the right path for self-improvement, overcoming human vices and freeing ourselves from them. This is what allows the soul to become wise. In this lies the entire meaning of our earthly existence.
A resonant silence filled the temple. Every millimeter of space became saturated. Every breath taken in such a state filled the disciples with silent knowledge and a sense of unity with the divine will. It was a priceless spiritual experience, vividly lived by all, bringing a new portion of awareness crucial for spiritual development. A stout man named Mark, sitting in the last row, decided to join the conversation. All this time, he had been attentively listening to the sage's instructions, trying to comprehend them. He raised his hand uncertainly, assessing whether it was worth asking his question and whether it would be relevant now. The master granted him the floor to be seen. The man stood up and began his question.
Great master, throughout our meeting, one question has been troubling me. Is there a chance that the content of your lectures, trances, will be understood and heard by society, by the masses? Today, people in society are struggling to survive. Can the phrase love all people evoke a response in the soul of a person who counts every penny until the next paycheck or hides in the bathroom from the beatings of an alcoholic husband? For them, it's as if it's said in another language, inaccessible for perception, somewhere in a parallel universe.
Mark paused for a second and continued a bit softer.
Please, dear master, explain why we present such complex things to everyone. Or is the understanding of truth the prerogative of only developed souls, and your sermons are given only in the hope that one of the few souls will resonate and understand the true meaning of what is said? Or is there another meaning in them that I don't understand?
The keeper of knowledge responded without hesitation. as he possessed absolute knowledge and the rare talent to convey knowledge in a form accessible to a specific disciple at a particular stage of their development.
To understand our lectures, of course, a certain amount of preparation is required. People fully immersed in everyday problems cannot hear even the needs of their own soul, let alone the knowledge of truth. And before listening to trances, one needs to read books. The trance simply amplifies a thought. Phrases in it are constantly repeated, which reinforces them in our consciousness. To make the trance effective, you need to receive and comprehend this thought. And you can get it from our literature, of course, if it's already an adult person and not a school child.
But isn't the book Darshan compiled from materials from meetings like ours?
Asked the person in the front row.
Of course. And a person must read the book and understand what is said in it,
continued the sage.
So a person can prepare to receive knowledge, understand its basics.
And how does knowledge help a person to enter a trance state?
Asked one of the disciples.
When there is understanding, a person listens to the trance to transfer the knowledge received by the mind to emotions, to the physical level. Then they dance, try to experience emotions, repeat the settings to convey them deeper into themselves.
And for an unprepared listener, the trance won't affect them at all?
Clarified the same man.
Of course, if you offer them just a trance when a person has not received any information yet, one simply won't understand what needs to be done, or they will understand it incorrectly. They will decide that loving people means indulging weaknesses, helping thieves steal, giving a bottle to a drunkard so that he drinks even more, and nothing good will come out of it. On the contrary, they will do things that ruin other people, killing them spiritually and physically.
So, first, should a person read Darshan or other books? Will the understanding of what and how to do be formed in them correctly?
Summarized Mark, who still stood by his chair, listening attentively to every word.
And only then it is time for a trance, right?
Yes,
confirmed the master.
A trance should convey knowledge to the emotional level, strengthen it, so that person can experience something with their entire being. Therefore, if you introduce people to a trance without understanding the essence, such work will naturally be useless and won't bring anything good.
So, an ordinary woman, just by reading the book Darshan on her own, can understand its essence, though not completely?
Asked a young girl in a light floral dress with a slightly tilted hairstyle.
Of course, only if she has thought about it before, if her soul is prepared, can she recall forgotten knowledge from past incarnations?
The master nodded approvingly and confirmed her assumptions.
Of course,
he said.
If the soul is ready, it means that knowledge is already inherent in a person from the beginning. In this case, the trance will enhance their understanding. And if there is no such understanding, a person will not be able to comprehend the essence of the trance, and it will not have the necessary effect on them. And it could be even worse. The person might misunderstand the words and distort their entire meaning. After all, a trance consists of repeated phrases that become ingrained in our consciousness. Therefore, it is crucial to initially understand knowledge correctly.
What if these words are spoken not by an ordinary person, but by the keeper of knowledge?
The young woman joined the conversation again.
Then each phrase will be energetic. Every word is already energy. This is true purity of speech. And even if a person cannot consciously grasp this power, knowledge can come to them.
The master looked at her attentively and thought with joy that this young woman was very close to realizing the truth. He responded to the question with a calm, measured voice.
If a person knows the master, one can simply tune into him and feel something, understand. But if this person came from the street and is not yet familiar with the keeper personally, it will be challenging for them in these sessions. That's why trances, like songs and any other music, are good when a person initially understands their meaning, prepares for listening. First, they understand, and then they convey it first to the emotional sphere and then to the motor center.
Thus,
said the girl, contemplating the insights from the keeper of knowledge,
trance helps to delve deeper into oneself, feel and embrace the acquired knowledge with the heart, so that it remains with them on all their centers. This is where music and trance will help. But if there is no initial understanding, it may not help, or a person might reinterpret something in their own way, misunderstand it, and reinforce their misconceptions, right?
She spoke confidently and firmly, leaving no shadow of doubt about the truth of her words in the minds of everyone present. The master praised her for the initiative and ability to contemplate, after which he suggested moving on to the next question. The next question came from a guy sitting very close to the master. Throughout the conversation, he had been sitting slightly hunched, but when he began to speak, he straightened his back.
When we share trances, darshans, and other powerful knowledge on the internet, making them available to everyone interested, can someone find the master through them?
He spoke loudly, making his words audible from every corner of the room.
Perhaps initially, only in the emotional center. That is, one will listen without understanding the true meaning of the word awaken, but receiving a flow of new, unusual emotions from what they hear. After an emotional response to the received knowledge, they will start searching, understanding where they came from, what it is. Thus, they will find the master.
The sage looked at his disciple with a warm and understanding gaze. He responded to him in a calm and measured tone.
Of course, very often, it happens exactly like that, he said. But the person not so much understands as feels that there is something here. They feel something interesting that evokes new emotions, attracts them. They begin to delve further into this matter. Indeed, they find a lot that they can understand, deepen their knowledge, and then naturally, they search for who is the author of the wisdom they have acquired. So gradually, they may come to the keeper of knowledge.
In the temple, there were those who found their path to the master precisely in this way. One of them was a well-groomed woman, around 30 years old, dressed in a business suit and sandals with a small heel. Hearing the words of the great keeper, she immediately rushed to confirm them. The master noticed this and gave her the opportunity to speak.
The words just spoken fully apply to me,
she began her speech.
When I heard your voice in the trance, soul's aspiration to God, I felt a very strong kinship with the master. And after that, a very strong call of the egregore. And am I correct?
She continued.
That when people hear the voice of the master, a subtle connection with the master is established, like an anchor that pulls them further, calls them?
Of course. After hearing the song about the master or reading the book, a person receives certain impressions, creating his image in the head.
The keeper spoke calmly and measuredly, patiently explaining each word.
And there may be a feeling that this is precisely the voice of the keeper of knowledge. These emotions then lead the person, prompting them to seek new information, learn more and more about the master. The constantly received emotional response compels them to obtain the necessary impressions that change their spiritual world, transform them. These impressions make a person better, and this means they have not been in vain.
Having finished his answer, the sage looked at those who were listening, clear understanding of his words was evident on their faces. It seemed that each of those present had gone through something similar on the path to their master. A slight smile appeared on their faces, and their gaze was directed inward into their own memories. It was getting dark outside, and everyone understood that they would soon have to part ways. It was a bit sad for everyone, as each wished to stay a little longer with the Keeper of Knowledge, listening to his words and grasping the truth with his help. A brief silence was interrupted by a tall man with a neatly trimmed beard. He raised his hand, and the master nodded, inviting him to ask his question.
Master, I have one more question for you. In the Anahata Chakra, there is a petal of strictness. Am I correct in understanding that it initially develops thanks to strictness towards one's own vices?
Yes, of course,
replied the master in his usual measured tone.
But strictness should be directed primarily towards oneself. Just as everyone should laugh at themselves first, it is important to manifest strictness towards oneself at the beginning of the path to the realization of truth. Since by being aware of others' vices and shortcomings, a person forgets about their own. And this means that they are not evolving themselves. And that is the main thing one should do at the beginning of their path. Only later, having reached certain heights in understanding, can a person assist in the development of others.
To confirm his words, the Keeper of Knowledge shared a story about a disciple.
One disciple came to our school, read Castaneda, and started planning. Oh, I will develop others now, build a party of Nagual, teach meditation, some supramental stream I will channel down. And this, instead of thinking about how he will develop himself, how he can change. All his understanding resembled more of a game of Guru the Fool. He knew nothing himself, did not embrace with heart and soul the most important foundations, but volunteered to become a guru for others.
The sage paused for a moment to allow the listeners to fully sense the absurdity of the described situation. Afterward, he summarized the spoken words.
Therefore, everyone should first and foremost apply all acquired knowledge to themselves. Because if a person has not fully realized the truth, has not passed it through their heart and soul, has not understood what it means to manifest strictness towards oneself and ridicule one's own vices, they will never be able to teach it to others. Therefore, it is necessary to first pass the truth through oneself, to be imbued with this knowledge, and then transmit it to others.
Having finished speaking, the sage slowly stood up, indicating to others that the conversation was coming to an end. Through the windows, reddish rays of the sunset penetrated, illuminating the entire space of the temple with a soft glow. But even warmer was the subtle radiance emanating from the disciples, saturated with the wisdom and true love of the Keeper of Knowledge. It was felt that everyone was ready to make conscious efforts to preserve and multiply the invaluable treasures obtained during this unforgettable meeting. For the disciples, a new life filled with divine love was beginning, and they were eager to bring the received light to people. The disciples knew that preserving true knowledge was possible only in one way, by applying it to oneself and passing on the gained experience to others. And in this, everyone on earth had faithful helpers: God, the Master, and the school created by Him.
do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.